Hello, and welcome to episode 24 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week, I'm joined on the podcast by Chris Clough. I first heard about Clough on Voice Ed Radio and started listening to his podcast, Chasing Squirrels. He comes from outside education originally as a classically trained chef and came into education later. He has worked in a lot of capacities and a lot of really unique capacities, but currently works in what we would call an alternative school here, specifically working with students who have been expelled or suspended. He is also just a mind-blowing guy. He's understated, calm, and brilliant. He will drop nuggets of weapons-grade wisdom as casually as asking how your day is. Chris and I talked for nearly 2 hours, and it is all awesome. So I've decided to do something special. This week, you will get the second half of our conversation, which is where we actually got into my typical three questions on the show. And then next week, as a special Thanksgiving bonus episode, I'll be releasing the first half of the conversation, which is focused more on Clough's work in his position and his podcast as well. In this part of the conversation, we talk about how important it is for us to look after each other as teachers, sharing our context, and really drawing on the connections we make, taking risks as teachers, demystifying the education system for kids, and being a little bit of everything for our students. So, sit back and enjoy episode 24 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Chris Clough. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, Brad Treffler, and tonight I am so thrilled to finally, after much deliberation and scheduling and me canceling on him because I'm a terrible host, am finally getting a chance to interview the wonderful Chris Clough. Could you please introduce yourself to my audience for me? Because I don't think I can do you justice with my own words.
Thanks. Okay, so like you mentioned, my name is Chris Clough. I come to you folks out of Ontario, Canada. My teaching portfolios, I work with students that have been expelled or suspended from their regular programming. In my school board, there's four sites. Our school board split up into four chunks. So I am one of the four sites. I'm fortunate to be able to work with a CYW. So between the two of us, we deliver programming to students that could be coming to us from six different high schools. So that's my day-to-day. Prior to that, I was in alternative education, which I can give some shape to later. Prior to that, in special education. And way before that, I was a chef. So I'm only in my 12th year of teaching, 13th year of teaching, I think. Prior to that, I was a chef. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you. And you didn't mention you're also the host of the Chasing Squirrels podcast.
Okay, if you lead me, I will. But I'm not going to throw down on that. This is your gig, right?
Well, that's how I found about you. I mean, your podcast like is so awesome. I just love the title, and then the show's also great. So it's a win across
okay,
the board.
Okay, so yeah, I do a little podcast on myself, Chasing Squirrels. So just constantly fascinated by the shifts in the movement in education, kind of a loose theme of change and how we deal with change, how teachers deal with change. And I've been really fortunate to get some, just doing the cold call, hey, will you talk to me? And people saying, yeah, I'd love to kind of chat with you about this. So yeah, Chasing Squirrels podcast.
I've been listening to your podcast for a while, but when I listened to your recent episode of your EdCan presentation, I even messaged you because we've been trying to line this interview up for a while. And then I listened to that and I was like, a whole new level of respect. Like, I understood not only what it is you do, which I didn't realize before, but what it is you do was so clear. But beyond what it is you do, it's what it is you feel that came so clear through that presentation that, I mean, like, you literally had a moment where you got emotional in the middle of it. And this was a recording of a live presentation in front of administrators. Like,
yeah, I choked. Administrators from across Canada.
Yeah.
Like, that was a good space to have that conversation.
I was, and yet I was so blown away by the realism of what you presented. I was left speechless as I listened to it. It was one of those that I was listening to in my car, and I got home and I didn't stop it. I just sat in my car and let it finish because I didn't. I listen to podcasts a lot, and I'm totally fine with interrupting them. But that was one of those rare moments where I was like, I need to hear this to the end without interruption. Like, this is a real moment. I cannot break up with washing dishes. Like, this needs to be focused. And
thank you. I appreciate that. I was asked in a couple different frames coming out of that. It's funny how the direct question that I was asked when I came off the stage was, what was it that choked you there? You know, there's a whole lot of questions that could be asked, you know, about the context of the kids, the challenges of the work, the bureaucracy of the system, lots of interesting kind of pokey things, but maybe I opened it up enough that they felt they could ask that personal, deeply personal question. What was it that kind of choked you up? Like, you know, you don't often ask strangers sitting on a bench that are having a bad day sobbing, like, why are you crying? You know, it just doesn't, you don't, right? And you know, people don't have to go there. So I don't know, maybe it was just something that I unlocked in people, but I had several people ask me, I had three different people ask me, like, what was it that kind of choked you up? And I don't think they were unaware of the presentation that happened in front of them. I think they're just being deeply authentic, as in, like, what was it that you were feeling there? Because everyone kind of noticed that, you know, I'm crying on stage. And it was a funny amalgam of thinking about my own children and trying to affect change in a system that the cells move really rapidly, but the body moves so slowly, you know? So my own two children, and then thinking about the students that I work with, and in some ways trying to open up spaces where they're noticed in a more interventional fashion. And I think the third part was just a little of the fatigue. Honestly, the fatigue of just human fatigue, who happens to be a teacher and fighting for stuff for the kids, you know, better programming for the kids that the kids and families that I serve. So
I think the third one is really what came across to me listening to it. I think listening to it, I felt like it was very clearly, because it came at a moment, I felt like so much of that conversation was, this is the system that exists. These are the kids, hypothetically, that come to us. These are the numbers of kids. These are the raw data. And it was in that moment where you were having this, not that name it wasn't real, but this especially real moment where you were like, these are my kids. It was like, there was even, like, if I remember right, there was even a word transition where it was like, and my kids. And that's where you were like, I don't know, in almost a transition into a call to action at the same time of like, do you want to help? Then you need to. And then it was like,
I know,
all of the things sort of flooded in on you at once. Like, you'd held them at bay as long as you could, and then everything hit you. And it was so real. It was so powerful. I felt myself like on the verge of tears just listening to you. Like, oh, I want to help those kids. Like, I want to help make this a thing in Canada and in America. Like, ah, it was so real and powerful. I can't even in words.
I actually thought it was going to be a little bit lighter. I mean, that was part of not my intention, but just to be slightly provocative and cheeky with my first slide, you know, asking a group of highly, highly trained, successful professionals why they had never been suspended. And that's the first slide that I had sitting up there for quite some time. You know, why weren't you suspended? Because it's the other side of it, you know, like you heard in there, me saying that often that lead question is, why were you suspended? There's a lot of reasons why a power holder would ask that of someone who has done something wrong. But it was interesting to measure the looks on their faces when I asked them quite, because I think they didn't hear me correctly. I think they thought they didn't hear me correctly, despite the fact the slide up behind me said, why weren't you suspended? You know, because who asked that of somebody who's making six figures and, you know, is at a Canada-wide, well-known network of powerful people.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I was going to start kind of cheeky, but then I just got all serious on myself, and I should have had just as cheeky slides for them. I don't know if any of them were as clever as that first one, but yeah. It was like I said, it was a good place to have that talk. Somebody asked me afterwards around the actual, the design of that, as in how did I sort of put that talk together? And I said, I never, in putting it together, tried to think for or of the audience. I just put down my story. So,
and that reads so well, even in the audio only recording of, I mean, that reads so well of just, that was clearly you. And that's why when towards the end you start to get emotional, it's so logical that you got emotional, if that makes any sense. Like, it's clearly you. That's what happened. And that's who you are. So, of course, in front of this room of people, it's going to come out in every way.
It was good. I would totally, I mean, it's, yeah. I made some connections there. Some people asked me, you know, I was also clear about stating who my team was. I don't do this alone. I could never do it alone. My colleague that I work with, you know, made it clear to reach out to her as well. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that this, it's seeds. I say to her sometimes, you have to be happy with being a signpost sometimes. You may never see the direct change that you're looking for, especially in mixed groupings, right? She has a lot harder time with that. She wants to affect directly and be there for when it happens. I'm a little more circumspect. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing in the right moment with the right people and the right resources. And maybe I'll notice that I've moved it a little bit, but I know that I've done right by the individuals that's in front of me. So,
Yeah, I get that. Can I ask you one clarifying question? What is a CYW? That's an acronym. I don't know.
Child and youth worker.
Child and
youth worker. Yeah, so basically, let's say someone that has training in sociology and counseling, and they've changed, it was child and youth worker. I think they've changed the acronym, at least as far as the college and university offerings up here, to college and youth counselor. So they've made it more specific to the task at hand. So.
So is their goal then, so their goal is for college and career readiness?
No. It can be therapeutic. It can be that, but it's also therapeutic. Self-regulation, emotional support, drug counseling, abuse counseling, just wellness counseling, someone to listen. Pam, my colleague, has a diverse portfolio of conversations that she can support. So I'm fortunate to be able to.
So, but you said college and youth counselor is more accurate to the goal.
Child, not college. Child.
Oh, child. Yeah. Okay. So the transition is to child. Okay.
So, yeah. So she, no, like her title. So a CYW is a child, a youth worker, but now they, child and youth, but they flip to child youth counselor. They've taken the worker off it, because they want to emphasize the therapeutic nature of the counseling that they do. She does do job counseling as well. She does.
Okay.
But I would say that there's an idealism that school in general results in that good paying job, and we support that. But we do lean on the wellness before curriculum mantra. So there's a whole lot of stuff that you have to unpack when you start building relationships with the kid, right? It's, whatever the system did to send the kid into our context needs to be unwound and unpacked a little bit before we can even get to, you know, working on a history credit or a math credit. It's not so simple.
Yeah. And that, again, you know, you're talking about kids that are, I mean, what we would call high risk. They've already been kicked out of school. You know, I mean, that's already where they're at.
Right. But like I said, in that talk, it could also be someone that just makes a once off mistake. And also in our jurisdiction, you can be suspended for not having your inoculations up to date. So when I did that cheeky question, why weren't you suspended? You know, some might be thinking, well, I didn't do drugs, or I didn't, you know, beat the heck out of somebody in the hallway. But if your parents were really busy and they didn't get you to the doctor to get your shots, you're not a bad kid, but you will be susceptible to the exact same, suspension kind of procedure until you're a suspended kid until you get your shots updated.
See, we have an ability for parents to refuse. They just have to fill out a piece of paper to refuse inoculations and shots and
vaccines. Yeah, we have that too, but you don't, it doesn't, if it hasn't been done, it doesn't preclude you from being suspended. Do you know what I mean? Like, if the kid were suspended, because it's a
they can't fill it out after.
Yeah, it's not a procedure that you just kind of go, oh, okay, well, let's just I'll fill that paper out. And now the kid can go back to school. There's a vetting process where that has to be examined because we have that as well. And there are obviously contextual and cultural reasons, philosophical reasons why someone would not want to have a vaccine of some sort. But you don't. They don't get to call it and instantly flip the decision. You know, when it's. And this isn't as instantaneous. There's communications that come around this as well. So,
yeah, by the way, of
your shot's up to date, right? So it's not so sudden.
Man, your context is so completely different than mine. And like, yours is that your context is the one we get rid of kids to, if that makes any sense. Like. There's that kid that we're just like, all right, I'm never going to reach this kid. Dump him on Clough. That's essentially what we say. I mean, without knowing who you are specifically, mm-hmm. That's essentially what we do at our school.
I would love to meet your Clough.
I don't think our Clough is as good as the real Clough. I'm not going to lie.
You
know what,
though? I'm just trying to build capacity, dude. Like, seriously, if you, I'm not trying to give you homework, but I would love, it is so hard to find other peeps like me and my colleague Pam that do the work that we do. And it's funny, it's not as simple as just being open and saying, hey, check out what we do. Like, if you ever want to see what we have going on in our classroom, go to the hashtag #WeAreAccess. Simple. WE, the letter R, and access, ACCESS. And you'll get to see what our classroom looks like. We don't have kids' pictures there, but you can see what we're doing, what we're pursuing for professional development. You get peeks in. And even that transparency has not returned a, hey, I do the same work as you. Let's connect. So I'm a year and a half into this, and I exist. Like, I'm findable. I really am. I don't, you know, I'm pretty findable on Twitter. Like, I don't. It's me. That my Twitter handle is actually me. My Gmail account is actually me. I guess if you were like chasing squirrels, who does that? You know, but you can still, my name's on it somewhere. But I have not been able to find, and there's got to be some other people out there. Someone has made a reference, actually Jen Apgar. She said she sent me a link to two individuals that do similar work in her board, but I haven't been able to find other people like me. So if you can find your Clough, dude, find your Clough. Connect them to me.
I will connect you with our lesser Clough.
What it's just I just want more peeps in my. I want to meet other people that are doing work like me, so I can get better practice.
Absolutely, I will help you. And any of my listeners, if you're listening to this, you know, please connect Clough to other Cloughs. That's a thing. Make him the other Cloughs.
That's awesome.
Hashtag the other Clough.
That's awesome. We'll go with
that. Awesome. All right, well, we're 53 minutes in, and I haven't asked you one of my questions.
You can throw one down if you want.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to, with no transition, and this will probably end up being the start of the second episode at this point, but that's fine. So my first question of all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Remember when I use that example of how we don't usually walk by when we see someone crying and saying, hey, you know, why are you crying? The random stranger. That.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That in a nutshell. We so vividly see some of the challenges that happen right in front of us. We effectively go for it. Maybe we help, maybe we jump in, but I don't know if we transition well to then sharing it and saying, here's what's happening in my context. Here's what's happening in my school board or district. Here's what's happening across the nation. Like, I don't know if we have really great stepping stones to be able to share, clear stepping stones to be able to share our contexts so that we can maximize our the power of our common experience. And I would say that's something that's growing very interestingly with students, where we're encouraging them to have digital portfolios and kind of consider global goals and think as a global citizen. And then you flip to the support team, the teachers, and I think maybe we're kind of just like, you know, kind of pushing our kids forward and say, you can do it, you can do it. But are we taking those same risks for ourselves? So I think there's something there. I think there's something to that. I think that's where I would go with that. It's just that ability to feel safe, to feel heard, to feel connected, and to feel like you've got a little bit of a hold on that moment that you're changing and that moment that you're moving positively forward. And it doesn't change the grind of the work. It doesn't change the scope of the work. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, teaching's tough and, you know, everything about the context is good work, tough work. But it's that second layer of how do we get outside of our classroom, walk the hall, walk the community, walk the jurisdiction, and get our stories out there so that we can kind of not have to just be happy at, you know, weekend PD sessions.
I love that. I love the last point of that is to not just be happy at weekend PD sessions.
So you get the reference. And, yeah.
And I do. But to me, that speaks to a localized issue of the kind of people listening to this podcast, the kind of people listening to this or my podcast or your podcast or involved on VoiceEd or even Connected Educators on Twitter. Mm-hmm. How often are we seeing that reflected in the people next door in our classrooms, like next door to our classroom, in our hallways and in our actual schools? How often are we the island locally, even though we know we are connected globally? And I love that last part of, like, you only feel good on weekend PD sessions because it's pulling from a wider net to find less people than are even in your local situation.
Well, also I would challenge because it's safe to feel good. That's a very safe and supportive. And again, I think it's one of the best classrooms that a teacher can go to, right? And if you're going to choose to spend some money to go to weekend PD or, you know, an after school PD where it's more like personal PD, you're invested. You're willing to sort of spend that money in order to sort of do something because it's a passion play. We don't often put ourselves necessarily in what would be considered EDU harm's way in order to teach ourselves a lesson. You know, you want to move towards something that you feel like you can use in your classroom that kind of speaks to your soul as a teacher that all your friends are going to on the weekend. So you're building that idea or that ideal of everyone's kind of doing it, so I should do it too. I just like to shape it a little bit with is that if that's not – when that no longer becomes risky to you to put yourself out there for a weekend educational getaway – are you then willing to amp it and say, okay, I'm no longer getting that same kind of thrill of learning about Twitter or Flipgrid or, you know, book snaps anymore. Can I now, what is the next thing? What will give me that kind of thrill where the heart beats a little bit faster and I'm not quite sure if I'm going to be good at this? It's that adrenaline junkie kind of factor. So, yeah, once you, and for those of you that are, you know, for teachers that are comfortable with those weekend events, let's say, and that isn't, you know, it's kind of commonplace for them to be able to go for that, I would still challenge and say, okay, where is it that you're feeling a little uncomfortable and feel that sense of risk? Go there more often. Go there more often. Mm-hmm. And it could be for some teachers to, you know, ask to sit in their colleague's classroom on their prep period. Can I sit and watch you teach? It could be taking their class out onto the soccer field and saying, you know what, we are going to do an English class out here today. It could be trying to do an activity out in the hallway. Like I said, I always like to go for the evidence. What is the evidence that would actually, without saying I could never be that or I can never do that, what's the evidence that's actually supporting that thinking? Or are you kind of going along with a operating system decision?
Well, and I think the other thing you're hitting on is that risk is relative.
Yes.
And like, I'm cool with that. For me, doing a lesson on the track is nothing. Like, that's fine, whatever. Doing a lesson wherever I happen to be, I'll teach there, no problem, fine. But for other people, that could be a risk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of what you're hitting on is this sort of relative risk of don't be satisfied because you've done a risk to someone else and it's no longer a risk to you.
Well, I would go, I think, you know, without even being cerebral about it, because sometimes being overly cerebral, you access parts of your logic system that I would say, don't even bother. Go completely physiological. Think about that feeling. Think about that dream that you have where you're standing in front of the class on the first day of September and you haven't prepared a lesson, so you just go for it. And then you wake up, but your heart's still beating fast. Recreate that physiological response today in class. What will it take? What will it take for you to feel a little bit of that physiological response? You don't have to be overly logical about it. What would make your heart beat faster? I'm not telling anyone that's listening to this, you should under prep and just like go in, you know, disheveled, unshaven. The educational risks that you're talking about, like you said, they're relevant. They're contextual, right? Another buddy mm-hmm. that I was talking to, we talk about the intentional interventions in the day. So where are you sort of saying, I need to break this up a little bit because I think I'm in a groove and it's only getting deeper, not getting any more interesting. And to sort of wrap this, because this is one good question. Sorry, I'll wrap it for my, you could push back, but just to close my thought.
You feel free, wrap away.
No, I was just going to say, just to close my thought, that idea of reaching out and letting your heart beat faster in a more public fashion, it doesn't matter how far I go outside my jurisdiction. Every single conversation that I have, you know, I'll say specific to my podcast and the relationships that has built, gives me a clearer understanding of my own context. Every single one. And if that's what I'm benefiting from by reaching out and staying open, and it doesn't feel, we started talking about that whole idea about, you know, the surprise factor, right? And is there, I don't feel risk in cold calling asking someone to be on the podcast. And to be honest, if someone is sort of reticent to do it, I'll pursue. I'll say, no, like, you have a great story. This is like, I will say the exact, I'll speak from my heart and say, I need to know more about you, but I think there's others that would really appreciate hearing how you did this. Yeah. That doesn't feel risky to me. Now, somebody else listening to that will take that as a cue, like, wow, if this kind of like schmuck can do this kind of conversation, well, I could probably go and ask my colleague next door if I could just sit and watch them teach math. I don't even have to say that I don't feel comfortable or competent teaching math. You could just say, you know what? Your kids seem to be really, really digging whatever you're dishing out here. Can I just sit and watch for an hour on my prep? So if that opens that up, I think that's where the assumption that what's going on in front of us, we can't speak directly about. I think that's a major, that is a major thing that I see as keeping us from really becoming whatever that might be.
Yeah, I like it. I think you're right. I think we need to be willing to take that risk and address the guy on the bench crying. I like that.
Hey, not say, are you crying, but why?
Why? What is it that's making you cry right
exactly.
now? Exactly. No, I like that. And that kind of leads pretty naturally into my second question, which is, what is it that you are doing in your classroom that you wish everyone else would do?
No idea, dude.
No, that's not how this works, Chris.
I know. I can only speak so I'll address. So the elephant in this is that my classroom is so isolated from other classrooms. So I can only go by what I wish the system would do more of, and it's just kind of decode pathways. Like when kids know when they've been systematized, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, they know when bureaucracy is the lead. It doesn't matter how nicely it's been kind of proposed to them. And we can't bait students with support systems, but say you have to qualify somehow to get the support system that I mentioned before, connecting dots and resources that aren't being used. So I think one of the things that my colleague and I do a lot of is demystifying the system. Like we've often called ourselves like liaisons to the system, helping a kid understand not only their path, let's say, to becoming suspended, but helping them understand their IEP, so their individual education plan. Right. What does their credit counseling summary mean? Like the marks that are actually on that summary of all the credits they've completed. How to have conversations of self-advocacy back with their guidance counselors. How to have a straight up email conversation with a teacher that doesn't lean on, you know, over emotion and under informed kind of just give me what I want kind of stuff. Like, how do you negotiate? How do you haggle? How do you represent the student side in a positive fashion? I'll only assume that this isn't happening as much, and I'll say away from me because I've always been kind of that guy that had those conversations with students. But maybe I'll say within the system in general, it's not happening enough or happening clearly enough.
As you're saying all this, I'm thinking of, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Incredibles, an old like Disney movie. And there's like a moment in that movie where the main character, Bob, is being yelled at by his boss early on. And he's like, how do your clients know the intricacies? They're penetrating the bureaucracy. And I'm envisioning you as Bob Parr in that moment going like telling your kids, okay, here's what you say.
Yeah.
Here's where you go. Yes. Here's who you talk to. You go to talk to Sally on the fifth floor and you say, and I'm kind of imagining that same vision of trying to be the, and this is going to hyperbolize, but still that trying to be the do-gooder in a scenario that's not necessarily in the kid's best benefit.
Yeah, no, that's, we often, I'll turn to my colleague Pam. I'm like, okay, here's the source code. Like, here, I'm gonna lay it out. I'll lay it out for you. Here's who you could talk to. Here's what this acronym means. Here's why this acronym was created. Here's the person that you can talk to sort of, you know, work parallel to whatever that decision was made. And I'm not, I am not jailbreaking or hacking the system. I'm making sure that everyone is clear on the rules of engagement. That's all. Because the thing, all this information can be found, right?
That one sentence alone. I'm not jailbreaking or hacking the system. I'm making sure everyone's clear on the rules of engagement. There are two different metaphors mixed in there, and both of them are simultaneously beautiful and depressing. That alone is such a... Wow, that's such a sad look at what education is and a beautiful look at how you want to fix it. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. It's funny, and it's often when we talk about the operating system, this operating system is robust, right? Like, it's how we've come to believe school should be done is the exact impediment to a lot of the forward-thinking ideas about where school could go next. And I don't hold court in a way that I sort of can isolate blame on anyone, because I'm also supporting a system. Like, to be, if I wanted to really pursue my idealized version of school, I could approach someone like, I don't know if you've heard the name Shauna Pollack, and she's up in Ottawa and she's opened her own
Blue Sky School, right?
She's opened her own school. You don't like the school system? Open your own school. And for some people, that is how they're representing what they believe to be the path, right? For me, I'm happy in the trenches. I'm happy in the trenches just staying within public education and saying to myself, I'm going to spend my time decoding the public system. It's bittersweet. It is bittersweet because there is a whole lot, and you know, I can do it for one student and another student comes in and it's the same conversation again. Sometimes it's nuanced. They kind of understand part of it. They don't understand other parts. I spend a lot of time, my colleague and I, Pam, we spend a lot of time teaching about the system. Just so that when we do speak of the system, it's right there with us in the room. It's not out there somewhere like you can't access it. So that kind of does become, I guess, the bittersweet element of it.
And I really like that you bring it in. I mean, so often I say, you know, our district office is downtown. Like, that's some space away from us. Like, this is what they say down there. This ever-present them that I can't fix. And I kind of like the way you're saying it. It's like, no, this whole thing is a system. This is just part of the system. Mm-hmm. It may be geographically distant, but this is still it. We are still it. We are all still in it.
Yeah. And then you distribute the responsibility for change to everyone that's willing to play a part. I'm entirely comfortable with making sure that everyone in the room knows the names of all the humans that they should. I can remember.
Here's the guy you go to complain at the board level.
Yeah. I can remember I was at a conference one time, and there was a teacher there talking about how they were chastised by their principal because they went directly to the superintendent and asked them a question about something. So superintendents are one level, let's say, above a principal in our in Ontario. Mm-hmm.
They're like five above principals where we are. But
okay. I'm sure there's some other layers there, but basically the principal would answer to the SO, the superintendent. Okay. So we're sitting at a table. At the table was a Ministry of Education representative, a superintendent, two principals, and two other teachers. So this person, in a very heartfelt manner, they were really bothered and hurt by the fact that they were told that they shouldn't communicate directly with the superintendent. So at the end of it, I turned to the superintendent. I said, have you ever given any principal instruction to limit the staff from communicating with you? Just turned. I literally pivoted 45 degrees and asked the superintendent and the superintendent. Now, you know, it's mixed grouping. Okay. So the superintendent was not a superintendent of this person in particular that was airing their sadness. And none of them were associated with me. I was just a guy in the room that had a question. And the superintendent said, no, that should never happen. I turned to the principal, not associated. I said, have you ever instructed a staff member to not have a conversation with a superintendent? And they said, not directly. So then I turned back to the person. I said, you know,
which is, by the way, such a non-answer, by the way.
It is. It's a non-answer, but it is an answer. And I said to the teacher, I say, now you have information in order to move forward. Choose how you want to use this somehow. These are all the humans in our system. None of us have the luxury of hiding. You know what? None of us can afford to have the luxury of hiding behind the system when humans are making decisions. You can't do that. Bad stuff happens.
Bad stuff happens. But how often is that actually echoed in the structures of our districts and boards? Because I just know for a fact, literally I know for a fact, there is a floor at my district office that you don't go to.
Why?
Because that's the superintendent's floor. And it is the only floor that the elevator empties to a secretary and a locked door.
Okay. So if it's not just a sign that says stay off the lawn, then what would be the opportunity where you could have a conversation with your superintendent? Now understand, I think a superintendent for you is a slightly different person than a superintendent for me. But right. If that's the person that you're aiming for, what would be the context that you could have a conversation with them?
You know, it's funny you ask that. So I'm gonna throw this out there. I'm a 100% hypocrite. I'm gonna throw this out there to preface this story. But 2 days ago, from the time we're recording this, I guess 3 days ago, from the time we're recording this, I was at a district training, with a lot of people at the district, and someone walks in my room and goes, "Hey, the superintendent's outside." I was like, "No, she's not. There's no press here. There's no way she's here right now." And they're like, no, she's right outside. I'm like, it must have been somebody else. Like, you're mistaken. She only shows up when there's press. And he goes, no, seriously, I'll go get her. And I'm like, okay, sure. You go get her, buddy. Whatever you say. And he steps outside and he comes back with the superintendent and the deputy superintendent in tow and says, hey, this is Brad Schreffler. He's my friend. I wanted you to meet him. And despite the fact that I can think of probably 17 different really important questions I have to ask this person, mm-hmm. I asked none of them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not willing in a professional context to say, hey, how did you just get a raise and a bonus of $15,000 when every one of your high schools dropped in scores? I'm with you 100%. Like, let's just have those conversations. Mm-hmm. But when it's my job on the line, mm-hmm. at least when it feels like it's my job on the line, That's a lot harder to do. And I'm a guy that sits on a podcast every day and just told this entire story to the entire world. So
right.
I'm farther ahead than most of my staff.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would just say that, you know, politicking and education actually are two separate things. And in that moment, if I would say, you know, and relationships are a vehicle, right? So if there's no relationship there, then even having an education conversation might be difficult. I would say it's doubly true if you're looking to have a political conversation, which it sounds as if that's what you were leading towards, like you wanted to get some political clarity there, a little provocation, some disruptor kind of things. I'm not saying you couldn't get to that conversation. For me, strategically, I probably wouldn't do it in that context if I didn't have a relationship. And not to say that would save you necessarily if you pursued the passionate side of your politic. But I think for me, it would give me more information about how to approach the conversation. How do I stage it?
Okay.
How to make it easy for that person to answer. Not to give me the answer that I want. How do I just make it easy for them to answer?
Right. And in the middle of a group of a lot of people is probably not the ideal scenario to
play
give
it out.
Them that position.
Play, go for it. Go. No, I'm not advocating that at all. My American teacher friends, I am not advocating for you to step up, you know.
Yeah, that was probably not the time. But I still felt like a hypocrite when it was done.
Well, part of it is, I think only in so much as I'm, did you at least shake the hand?
I shook the hand.
So good. So it's the start of the relationship, right?
And yeah, in our district, we're so massive that she has no recognition of who I am whatsoever, so.
She could, though, if you wanted to pursue the conversation. And I don't know if what I'm suggesting right now is dangerous. You're like, Clef, you just don't get it. No one does that. I get that part,
well, no
too, and
I don't know that that necessarily makes it dangerous. Like, does no one do it because no one does it, or does no one do it because it's dangerous?
Well, or does no one do it because the operating system has convinced them that that's how we go?
Right.
And that's the whole thing. Someone said, like the Matrix, right? That's the beautiful thing. That's the beautiful thing about the Matrix, is that it's so perfect. You never even know to ask the questions that would. There's no red pill. There's no blue pill. You need something from outside that system that gives you choice. And I would say that if you choose to pursue a conversation with superiors, good stuff can happen.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I don't know. I guess maybe, despite the fact that I like to believe I'm a 100% change agent and I'm all about disrupting everything, maybe I believe that my district is so completely institutionalized that change can't actually happen from the top. Maybe. Mm. And that's almost a scary thought in of itself. It's like, what am I doing any of this for if I don't believe my own district can change? But at the same time, I genuinely don't believe that the operating system I'm in can be drastically changed from the top down. I think it needs to come from the bottom.
Well, remember, it's okay to be a signpost.
You're just pointing people in the right direction.
Yeah. There's somebody that has listened to your podcast that thought to themselves, I would never do that. There's other people that have listened to your podcast and thought to themselves, I could do that if. And then there's others that have listened, like, this dude is just giving me permission just to go for it.
Well, for anyone of that third category, you have my permission. Go for it.
Yeah. Even if they just start vlogging or recording sitting down with their teaching partner and say, let's record this one. Let's start tracking some of the conversations, because as soon as my pen hits the paper, it all disappears. I would rather, can we record it? Here, and you know what? You record it. Fine. As long as it gets recorded. Doesn't have to be on my phone. Could be on your phone. It's like okay that. To be a signpost.
Cool. Wow. Chris, this is like the best interview I've done in my, like, hands down. I'm not lying. Like, this is awesome.
I totally appreciate your time.
I feel so bad having canceled on you the first time, because this is awesome. I love this so much. I am going to lead into my third and final question, even though I have like a list of them I could ask you, but I'm going to go to my third major question for my show.
Okay.
Which is, and this was where we get personal, and not that we haven't been already in this episode, but
I'm like, I'm okay there. Are you?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
I'm all good. All right.
So my last question for you is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
There's a couple. Is it okay if I do a couple?
Always. I wouldn't expect any less.
So I think from school, back in high school, I had an art teacher. His name was William Fitches. And, William, if you're still out there, dude, you gotta like connect with me on Facebook. I sent a shout out. I found the guy. You know, could be that, you know, I don't connect with students. That's all cool. But anyways, he was an art teacher. But, you know, it's funny. He really created the environment in his classroom that said, it's okay to be you. And if you wanted to do art during, you know, your, let's say outside of lesson time, people did art. If you wanted to do your math, you could do that too. If you wanted to come and help him, because he was also a clothes maker, come and help him do clothing. He was the type of teacher that, he was the type of teacher that didn't spend time on the structured lesson. He spent time sitting beside you, just time beside you. He spent time sitting there with you, talking to you. He would sort of just like plunk right down and like let you kind of talk about what it is you're working on in front of you, or talk about your day, or move you forward in your craft if you wanted to. I remember I was having a lot of trouble with watercolor, and he spent in a row three classes with me, helping me develop my watercolor style. Now understand this, you know, this is back 1984. This is still like lesson plans existed back there, and the class still had 25, 26 students in it. But he created a culture where that was seen as the norm. And that if he was sitting with you, it was because he was investing, not because you had a problem. He was investing time. So he had a profound effect on tweaking what my perspective of what a classroom could be, the opportunity that a classroom could be. When I was in my chef's training, Maria was a incredible, incredible cook. So she was like an aunt. She was like my mom. She was like a drill sergeant. And despite the fact that in my apprenticeship, I was signed up under the chef of the restaurant, I got all of my training from Maria. And Maria, so my chef training is in Italian cuisine, so Abruzzese, so from Abruzzo, sort of kind of central Italy, let's say, central-ish. She just, like, she was details, man. Like, you stir the pot this way. And I didn't often, like, I'm the guy, like, yeah, there's no scientific reason to stir a pot that way. None. You could stir it the other way. Yet, I do it the opposite way, and the thing wouldn't turn out. So it was like there was a certain element. I'm like, and then I would do it the other way, and it does turn out. I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense. But you know what? Sometimes that is the magic. You do have to kind of accept some of the random as rule. So I took everything that she said as rule. And I had so much trust in her instruction. I would blindly follow. I will do that. And it became, she really gave me a full appreciation of respecting the ingredients. And wasting nothing. You use everything. You're throwing it out because it fell on the floor, because there was a purpose and a place to use all the ingredients. And I think finally, would be my I'm gonna put two side by side. One, my spouse. And two, a teacher that I did my practice teaching with. My spouse, I actually did practice teaching with my spouse too, which is another podcast altogether. But when I was doing, my spouse went into teaching first. It just so happened that where I did one of my, practice teaching was at the school that she was at. So for whatever reason, the VP, the vice principal that sent me, I was like, well, why don't you go and work? You could go and work with your spouse. I'm like, okay, let's see how this plays out. She was a part of a program called Target, and Target was for grade 11 and 12 students. They were primarily behavioral students. It was a package deal. You go into it, you get a communications credit, you get a math credit, you get a hospitality credit, which I eventually started to teach because I got the job at that. I got a job at that school. But I went in and I watched someone that I knew very intimately and also just socially, like for a long time. Like I knew about teaching from her stories. But when I saw her work the room as a teacher, it was just, it was phenomenal. Like I was watching, because the stories are one thing, but then to see it in motion, I was just blown away at the professionalism, the respect that she offered to the students, the care and concern of making sure that they were confident in being able to do this communications course. So her background is in drama and English. So she was doing a communications course. And part of the major summative was some of these kids to be able to actually do an announcement in the school. Like that was their, to be able to do an announcement, to be able to speak up that way. And I was just kind of blown away with her professionalism. And proud of her, of course. The other person in the same school is I did a stop with a spec ed teacher, and she was the messiest, most sort of profoundly messy individual, but had a command of where everything was. Some way, somehow, she was just, papers were everywhere. She was kind of just nonplussed by everything. Like she was unflappable. And I'll never forget her saying, hey, you know, Clough, I tend to go by Clough, have always gone by. She's like, hey, Clough, do you want to give this a go? Like teach this spec ed lesson. I was like, sure. No word of a lie. She didn't break eye contact. She was still facing me. She shoved her hand into the middle of a pile of papers on her desk and pulled out the handout, handed it to me. She goes, here, start using this one. And I was like, that shouldn't work. Somehow it does. Because I'm then looking at her pile of paper, and she just narrowly missed her coffee cup, which was sitting on her desk. So, yeah, her name's Lee Haynes. Phenomenal teacher. So that's my grouping. That's my cluster, I think, that I carry with me in my toolkit. Definitely.
Huh. You know, it's a running theme on my podcast where if you take my three questions and I try to find a vein of commonality in them. And, you know, with your art teacher, it seems super obvious to me of this very much environmental learning of the teacher recognizing that the value is in the students. And it's not about the structure of the lesson as much as the time spent with the student side by side. And even into Chef Maria, looking at that sort of, you gave this trifecta of aunt, mom, and drill sergeant. And even in your description of your classroom, I can kind of feel like where you fill those roles with your students, where you come at them first in this very, okay, why did we end up here? And that's that aunt side of like, all right, I go to my aunt when my mom's pissed at me because that's who I go to. Like, so I kind of like feel like that's where you start. And then it gets to the, okay, now you've recognized, now why was that a bad decision? And that's that mom side. And then back to the drill sergeant of, all right, let's move on. Let's get to the next step. And even in talking about your wife and talking about the other teacher you studied with, like, I feel like I point to all of the aspects of teaching. And given that we've been talking for over an hour and a half at this point, that makes total sense to me. If you can't pick one teacher because you're everywhere, you're in all of the places at all the time. And that is just totally logical to the where we've ended up now. Like you are everything at all times, all the time, because you recognize the value of that whole picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the water. It's the water that I'm in.
Man. Well, I'm blown away. I don't even know. I feel like I have 75 questions. I feel like I could do 7 more podcasts with you. I don't even know where to go with all of this, Chris. You've blown me away.
I'm totally findable.
And I hope my audience recognizes that because he is absolutely findable. He is a very reachable guy. In fact, you can find him on Twitter at Chris J. Clough, right? Look at that. That was like a transition. It's almost like a new
That was perfect.
It was almost
that like was smooth.
And you can check out his podcast, Chasing Squirrels, which I highly recommend. if nothing else, to listen to his EdCan presentation. But the two episodes with Joan Apgar have been phenomenal, and pretty much every episode of that show makes you think. So I highly recommend Chasing Squirrels podcast. It is really good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Can I do a couple of shout outs?
Of course.
So I would be remiss if I didn't mention my colleague. Her name is Pam. She can be found on Twitter at Pam Sheena, and she's developing her own PLN and kind of pursuing a bunch of different kind of personal professional development stuff. So definitely connect with her if you're curious about her sort of perspective about what this podcast is kind of about, because she definitely would be able to give some shape and color to that. And of course, if you want to see what we were doing, what we kind of do, what our room looks like, you can do hashtag we are access, W-E, the letter R, and then the word access, and that's on Twitter as well. So happy to connect, happy to share. Broaden this silo, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, you can find Chris and myself both on Voice Ed Network.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is how we first met up, actually. That's how I came across your show, is through Voice Ed. So
good connections.
I do love my Voice Ed family. It's pretty much the best. It almost makes me want to go to Canada again. Almost.
It's worth it. It's worth the drive. It's definitely worth the drive.
It's a long drive from Florida. It's a long drive from Florida.
You know, I've driven to Myrtle. I've done that drive a few times. It's another 10 hours. I could make it to Florida. You could do the reverse.
You're close enough. No, I...
You know what? Flip it into some sort of a conference thing.
I want to try to. That is the plan. I really want to get up there. As many connections as I have up there at this point, like, I really want to get up there and meet you and Derek and Steven and Sarah and all those people. But I'll tell you the same thing I've told all of them. If you happen to want to come to Disney World, I have a guest bedroom you're welcome to stay in. So just throwing that out there. So
cool, man.
All right. Well, hey, thanks again, Chris, for meeting with me. And I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome, Brad. Thanks for giving me your time. I appreciate it.
Seriously, Clough, I was blown away by our conversation, and thank you so much for talking with me. If you want to connect with Chris, and honestly, you really should, you can find him on Twitter. He's at Chris J. Clough. And find his podcast, Chasing Squirrels, at chasingsquirrels.podbean.com. I also have a link to the EdCan episode we talked about at the beginning of this episode in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from all my listeners, so please reach out to me. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. As still, I would like to see more math teachers and college professors, I feel like, are things we're missing out on, and also administrators. I have a special project for administrators coming up, so if you're an administrator, reach out to me. Until next week, don't forget to ask the person on the bench why they are crying. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and is the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.